Today is May 22nd, 2009. This is Conduit. The panel is Sandra Taylor, Howard Taylor, Creativity or something like that.
She didn't know she was telling a joke. I loved it.
Excuse me.
That's
in here. All right.
I'm assuming that you're in here because we're creative people and you want to figure out how to structure that creativity so that you can get things done that you want to accomplish.
Now, you keep saying structure and creativity, and I need you to stop saying that. I need you to start saying structure and time, because I think that's what you're talking about, isn't it?
You're structuring your time to create the space for creativity.
Right.
So maybe you're structuring your life to allow the space for the creative things and the non-creative things so they all work together to accomplish.
Yeah, okay, I think that's more accurate. I'm not structuring my creativity.
Okay. you do mention what you've done in the video, basically.
Yeah. Sometimes I lie.
We have one.
Scientific paper on the mechanism of sleep. And one of the researchers said, okay, listen, if there is not some fundamental cellular necessity for sleep,
I'm going to sit up on the front.
Biggest evolutionary mistake on the planet. It's just, what a time sink, because everything needs to sleep. What a dead end that was. Hate it.
We don't have enough time for everything. And so, the first step in order to structure your life so that you have space for creativity is to do these macro planning things, figure out what's most important to you. What do you want to make space for in your life? In my life and in Howard's life, a huge, huge thing that we've always been completely agreed on is the fact
eating.
That
eating.
No. I wasted time on eating. The cooking. I had a cooking
waste of time.
Give me those little Jetson pills, please. Dinner done. Okay. Anyway.
The
biggest thing that we've always agreed on is family. For us, family goes in the middle of whatever else we are trying to accomplish. And that has been an agreed upon point with us since we started dating. And started seriously talking about maybe we won't actually get married. But that's one of
funny the story. Not going to tell it. Go on. But they know there's a funny story in there. So
anyway.
I keep acknowledging. Go on.
Anyway. So we decided that family is a huge thing. At the time we were first talking about building life together, we also realized that Howard wanted to make a living as a creative person. At the time, he was going to be a musician. He was graduating with a degree in composition from BYU. And so I married a musician, and now I'm married to a cartoonist, but he's the same guy.
We call that the bait and switch. Pick up a guy after the concert, find out he's actually the drummer. Anyway, go on.
When you are trying to figure out, you know, what's important to your life, what do you want to keep, what do you need to give the most time to, it is very, very helpful, and this has is very helpful mentally to figure out, okay, there are different mental spaces in your life, and we've talked about these, there's career space, there's job space, and there is hobby space in your life. We decided that family was very, very important. And that kind of counterintuitively goes into a career space because it is something that you are giving emotional and creative energy to. That is a career space thing. For me, family and mothering was very, very much my career for a good decade. I didn't do very much else.
She was a full-time mom.
I was her full-time, completely full-time. Now I'm kind of a part-time mom, part-time a whole bunch of other stuff. So the career space is the thing that takes up your most of your emotional and physical energy. That's the thing you want to do the most. You can have multiple career spaces. For a while, Howard was running two careers. He was running a management career at Novell.
Oh, yeah, when I was working at Novell, I put in 40 hours a week in the career space at Novell. I say 40 hours a week. That's, 60 hours a week because I was salaried. And that's what happens when they pay you a salary. You work through lunch, you work late, it's all that crap. Anyway, and then I was doing an additional 20 to 30 hours a week cartooning because, after I'd kind of given up the music thing, I want to be a cartoonist. So I'm working 90-hour weeks. Family dropped out of my career space. And I hadn't thought that family really belonged in the career space. This was poor planning on my part. I spent 5 years ignoring my family, and that's 5 years I don't get back. That is a significant loss. That is a significant loss. And if I had to go back and do it over again, I'm not sure how I'd do it, because I really love being a cartoonist, but I don't think there's a way for me to have done that without structuring my spaces so that all of the familial career space was managed by Sandra while I was the big mean guy who lived in the basement. So that was kind of my job. So big mean guy when you lived in the house at all.
Watch out, or I'll summon daddy.
I was good at that. I was still good at that.
A job space is, a lot of creative people will take a very, very mundane, routine kind of a job. So it doesn't, you go to the job, you get the money, you go home, and you leave it behind. A good friend of ours, Jim Hines, who writes the Goblin Quest books and Stepsister's Key books, deliberately has a job that he does not have to give any career space to it. It's job space. And that is one way to accomplish a creative life. As you're building up the creativity so that it can support you, if that's your goal.
It's kind of cliche. You go to Hollywood, and every 95% of the actors in Hollywood wait tables for a living. It's because they don't have to think about waiting tables. They don't have to give that any energy. And you can tell that when you're getting waited on in Los Angeles. But they do that because they're taking a job that allows them to have space to do other things, to think about other things. Brandon Sanderson deliberately took a job as the night desk.
Night auditor
at
Cotton Tree Inn in Provo,
so that he could just write, because nobody needs me to do any thinking. And what Elantris said, Elantris was written there. I'm not sure if Bisborne was.
So that's your job space. And then there's the hobby space. And the hobby space, hobbies are often things that we love to do, but which you have, for whatever reason, decided you're not going to throw your whole hope for the future into it. It's a thing that is there on the side, and when you have time, you get to it. And if you don't have time, you just let it go.
Let me describe this in a different way. So how many of you want to be writers? Okay, awesome. Okay, is writing a hobby? Do your friends think that writing is a hobby? Do your friends get to watch television when you don't? Because for your friends, television is a hobby, and they have seen that you have replaced their hobby with writing. This is because they are unimaginative. And what you have replaced, you have taken your hobby space and you said, I don't have time for a hobby. So I am expanding my career space to consume hobby space so that I can pursue writing. That makes sense? I recently picked up a hobby painting miniature games, little 28 millimeter miniatures. Loved it. Fun. Had to put it back down because there wasn't enough room in the career space for me to be spending 20 hours a week painting toy soldiers.
But it'll wait for you. This is the nice thing about hobbies. They wait for you.
Yeah.
There have been periods of time where I was an avid gardener, and right now, I have a mess. I haven't had time. I haven't have hobby space for a while.
Does anybody want like a bushel of dandelion salad?
Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
And so there's mentally creating those spaces in your life and deciding, okay, these are the pieces of my life. Does this go in the career space? Does this go in the hobby space? Does this go in the job space? Or does this just not go in at all? Do I not care about this and it needs to go out? Figuring that out makes a big difference in figuring out how to go forward, how to progress towards the goals that you want.
It's all about the eggs and the rice and the sand. You're not. Okay, good. There was a time management course where the guy got up there with a big glass jar, and some eggs, and some rice, and some sand. And he said, all right, I'm going to put all this stuff in the jar. And he starts by dumping the sand in the jar, and then dumps the rice in the jar, and then realizes there's room for about half the eggs. Oh, well, can't get it all in the jar. And then he, you know, empties things back out, and this time puts the eggs in first. And then he pours the rice in, and then he pours the sand in, and there's room for everything in the jar. And he asks the students in the class, all right, what did we just demonstrate? And one of the students says, there's always room to get everything in. No, that's not what this proves. What this proves is, plan your life around the big things first. Put the big things in there first, and then the little things will kind of fall into the cracks. And if a little thing doesn't fall into the cracks, well, I'm sorry, you've got too much rice. Sometimes it doesn't all fit in the jar. But that's what Sandra's talking about here. You set out these spaces, and then you pick the big, important things and start putting them in the jar, and then maybe you will have time to watch TV. Yeah, I mean, if you've got TiVo or something, so that TV... So that you schedule TV instead of TV scheduling you.
All right, so once you've got that, you've got your plan, and you've got your spaces, and you've kind of assigned everything to spaces, how do you actually get things done? How do we get things done?
Let's talk about how we get things done. I think that's more useful, because I don't know how they're going to get things done. Because frankly, it's hopeless. I have no idea how to teach you guys time management, because I can barely teach it to myself. But we're going to try anyway.
Yeah. First thing, if you have all day to get one thing done, or this is me, if I have all day to get one thing done, it won't happen. If I've got 50 things to get done in a day, I'll get 45 of them done. It's all about knowing how to realize that you just have to keep going and moving and stuff like that. So how do we structure our days? One of the biggest shifts that happened in our lives when Howard quit Novell, well, the biggest shift was the financial scary. Ooh, that was really very scary.
No more Hot Pockets.
Chicken nuggets. Keeps me very, very sad about the loss of the chicken nuggets. They got over it. But the biggest thing was all of a sudden Howard was home all day. And he had all day. And he had to do these and it used to be that he would go to work, you know, he had to get up and he had to be at work. So he'd get up and he'd go to work. And then he would come home from work and there was only this much space to get the comic done, which meant he had to get started right away. And so he would disappear in his office and he would reappear around 10 o'clock at night and go kiss the sleeping children. But there was no wiggle room for him to do anything else. All of a sudden, he had all day.
Well, now, before I left my job at Novell, the highest my buffer had ever been, the buffer is, you know, how many days ahead of the current day I'm working, was around 45, okay? And that was done on about 30 hours a week. Well, now that I've got 90 hours a week, which is how much time I used to spend working, the buffer dropped to 14. Well, the buffer didn't drop all the way to 2. The buffer dropped to 14 and never got above 25 for like 2.5 years. And I could not figure out how to keep it above 20 for a long time. It was just, what am I doing wrong? I've got all this time. Why can't I do this? Why is it not working? And it wasn't working because I had no schedule. No schedule at all. Around my work. And the important discovery for me was when I kind of picked up a hobby which wanted to intrude on my time. I would start going to the game store and hanging out with some of the people at Dragon's Keep. Oh, this is kind of fun. This is a neat environment. And then one day I brought my clipboard. You know what? I'm going to try drawing here. and realized, huh, I'm going to keep drawing. It was like going to the office. It's the weirdest thing. And people ask me, why do you do your penciling and inking at Dragon's Keep? Because I go faster. What? Surrounded by comic books and toys and interesting people, well, weird people, in a way. They're gamers. They're people who hang out at a comic book store, for crying out loud. They're frightening folks. Jeff knows them. Oh, you're one of them. That's right. Dan. Yeah. It's, I was effective. And when we made that discovery, I said, Sandra, I think we need to start budgeting, 20 miles a day of gas for my car because I'm getting work done. I don't know why it works, but it's working.
I knew why it was working. He didn't know why it was working, but I didn't know why it was working. And that's because there was structure in the day. He realized he wanted to leave the keep. He wanted to leave for the keep at noon. And if he wanted to leave for the keep at noon, there were things he had to accomplish, but he had to script before he could draw on the scripts. And so all of a sudden, morning became scripting time. And then afternoon became drawing time. And there was this scheduled point in the day. I recognized what was going on because I've been doing that for, I've done that for a whole decade, longer than Howard had. Because as a mother, all day, and my life, I had to figure out, oh, how do I make breakfast happen on time? How do I make lunch happen on time? How do I make dinner happen on time?
And you can't still send the kids off to school without first feeding them.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
In a child protective services shows up.
Yes. And so I had already started doing some of those things. I had already figured out how to take a great big empty day and put some structure into it. And we just didn't realize when Howard came home that he didn't know how to do that. I assumed he knew how to do that.
It was a really expensive lesson, too.
Yes.
It's not knowing how to manage your time and learning how to manage your time through trial and error is fantastically expensive. It's one thing to invest, say, $140,000 in the real estate market and have it tank on you and not have $140,000 anymore, because that's just money. And, money comes and money goes. But time, you only got 24 hours a day. No more, no less. That's all you're going to get. And if you waste them figuring out how to use them, that's a disaster. I'm sorry, I made you all feel guilty about the time that you wasted this morning on your commute or whatever. But it's one of life's great epic tragedies. So time management, boy, figure it out early.
Well, and the thing is one of the secrets is making use of those wasted times. Most of you want to be writers. That commute doesn't have to be wasted. That could be percolating story ideas. That could be, finding... Again, we're back to the eggs in the sand. You find how to sneak in a few more of those career moments.
My favorite NaNoWriMo story, I say story, not a story that was actually written from NaNoWriMo, but a story about somebody who successfully completed their novel, was from a guy who wrote his novel in a month on his lunch breaks at work. So I've got an hour each day in which to write, and I can type 80 words a minute. And so I'm going to queue up story and plot and all that so that when I hit the beginning of my lunch break, I am moving at 80 words a minute for an hour. Well, 8 times 6 is 48. That's almost 5,000 words a day. But 5,000 words a day in a month, you can write, we can't quite write epic fantasy. You can get halfway there. But 150,000 words, you can make some serious progress.
All right, so one of the keys is breaking up the day. If you have all day, you're breaking up the day. If you don't have all day, you're breaking up the time that you do have. If you come home from work and you have this whole, 4-hour stretch of evening, you don't want to get to the end of it and say, where did it go? There was so much to do and I didn't get any of it done because I sat. Or, and this happens to me all the time still, where the time gets away from us.
Speaking of time management, where are we in the outline?
Right here.
Okay. So we're almost to the part where we get to the questions, right? Okay, good.
How much time do we
have? We're only about 20 minutes, so we're fine.
Ah, we have 20. Okay. wear a watch, carry a watch, have a clock. That's a good idea.
Yeah, when I'm penciling and inking, when I am scripting, I always have clocks in front of me. I don't like being a slave to the clock. I love hyperfocus. You guys know what hyperfocus is. Hyperfocus is when you start working and then you stop working and realize 6 hours have passed and you forgot to eat and I need to pee so bad I can taste it and you know, I need to pee so bad my back teeth are floating.
Stop.
I started breathing yellow.
Stop.
Okay, that's hyperfocus. We love hyperfocus, and sometimes for some people a clock will interrupt hyperfocus. For other people, that clock is something that's there to help you make sure that you're not idling. And I need the clock to help me make sure I'm not idling. When I'm doing sketches, I've got a sketch in 1,000 books. I have a clock sitting right there in front of me, and I will start by pacing myself. I'll do a sketch, and I'll look at the second hand on the clock. Say, all right, that sketch took me 45 seconds, and I made 10 bucks. That's a pretty good rate. And I'll pace myself, and then I stop looking at the clock and allow myself to hyperfocus. And yeah, sure enough, an hour later, I've knocked down 60 books, and my hand has started to hurt, and it's time to go ice it and take some time off. And hey, I made 600 bucks. That's okay. I like sketch editions. They're awesome. It's how we pay the bills. But having a clock in front of me is helpful.
Hyperfocus can also be your foe. Your friend, it can be your foe.
Well, hyperfocus is awful if you're playing World of Warcraft. Any of you play World of Warcraft?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Or if you, for example, have to be, there's kindergarten son's program at 2, and you're hyperfocused on editing a book. Example, not drawn at random. he was commenting to me, Mom, I know why you're always late.
Yeah, when your six-year-old says, Mom, I know why you're always late, that's like the guilt knife. Stab, stab, stab.
It's because you're always working. Yes, I am.
Was it Eric who said, I know why we get to go to the park, because Mom doesn't have to work.
Yeah, when she's not busy, she likes to spend time with us.
Oh.
But see what happened? And this is a funny time management story. Tracy Hickman was at Life, Universe, and Everything. How many of you attended Life, Universe, and Everything? I'm making you raise your arms because the room is kind of muggy and I want it to smell like pit when we leave. So Tracy Hickman talked to us about this project called XDM, Extreme Dungeon Mastery, and he said, it's fantastic. It's everything that the role-playing industry has forgotten. And we've got this great book idea, and I can't get it published because everybody who would publish it is invested in, you know, mechanics instead of storytelling. And I said, well, Tracy, you should self-publish. You've got an audience. And I handed him a copy of Under New Management. I said, Tracy, we self-publish. It's not hard to do. You know, this book didn't cost me a lot. I had to buy 5,000 of them to get the cost low enough. But here, and I handed him a book. And we had this cognitive disconnect where I'm handing him a book and saying, this is what you can do. And Tracy received the book and said, oh, this is what Howard can do for me. Oh, and I like what he draws. I will have him illustrate, too. And then he said...
At which point he's like, okay, you're my publisher. And we said, yes, sir.
Yeah, I will be Tracy Hickman's new publisher. I got no problem with that. But then he said, well, we need books by Gen Con.
All right, hang on a second.
My printer... Yeah, we said no way. It can't be done because our printer is in China and it takes 3 months for the boat to cross the ocean. Well, it takes 1 month for the boat to cross the ocean.
It takes 2 months to, you know...
Anyway, so there's this 3 month window. So we're 3 months back from Gen Con. The book would have to be done, finished by April 30th. And it's like February. We can't finish a book by then. And Tracy said, okay. And then he came back in 3 weeks and said, no, I really want you to do this. Tracy,
I really
want those 3 weeks back. And so we looked at our life, we looked at our schedule, and we said, all right, what do we need to do in the next 5 weeks, if we're going to hit an April 30th deadline, and this isn't a deadline on, you know, submitting a manuscript. This is a deadline on completely edited files laid out, you know, InDesign files, cover art, all of this.
Tracy did not have a complete draft yet.
Oh my.
He had an outline and a partial draft. So in 5 weeks, we went from outline and partial draft to completely laid out, edited, illustrated book.
NaNoWriMo.
Okay? I don't recommend this to anybody.
This is very difficult. Now, in terms of time management, there were pieces that we had to do. I had to do the illustration, and I knew I'm going to need to draw about 90 pictures. Turned out to be 135. I need to draw about 90 pictures for this book, and it'll take about this much time. But Sandra has to lay them out, and it has to be Sandra doing the layout, because the pictures kind of need to relate to the text, and the feedback loop has to be really close. If I'm trying to draw this while somebody across town, or heaven forbid, across the internet is doing a layout, it's just not going to work. It's got to go faster than that. So Sandra has to do the layout. Well, if she's doing the layout and I'm doing illustration, what are the pieces we can farm out? We farmed out the editing. We hired Stacy. I made Stacy wave during my last presentation. I think you're doing this one too. We hired Stacy Woodman to do our editing. She's edited stuff like this before. Not game stuff. You worked for Wizards.
I worked for Wizards. That was close enough.
Yeah. That's exactly. She knows how to edit. Let's outsource this piece. We know she's good at it. And so we had Stacy doing the editing for us. In order for that to happen, we knew that Tracy had to have a manuscript to us by a certain date. And so we started back scheduling, you know, working back from the deadline.
It should go like this. Author writes book, submits book, and then publisher goes through whole editing process with several revisions and carefully, you know, checking everything over. Then you hand it to the layout person who starts laying out, who goes and then works with the illustrator. And now those two steps kind of go together, where the illustrator and the layout person are saying, okay, well, there should be a picture here, and there should be a picture here, and then you work back and forth. Yeah, we did it this way.
Yeah, we ran it massively in parallel.
Yeah,
and we
Tracy would be writing chapter 5, I was laying out, you know, Monkey was laying out on chapter 7, Howard would be drawing pictures for chapter 9, and poor Stacy only had a week to do all of her magic editing, and because we didn't have chapters until then. And so it was a lot.
It was crazy. It was lots and lots of hours. And what we realized as we were doing it is that this career space, the one portion of career space, we want to be, it's not really my comic. It's kind of my illustration. I don't know what space this fits into.
Publishing.
I don't want to be a publisher. Why the hell do we do this?
I don't know why we do this, but we did this.
What a stupid idea. So this thing that didn't belong in our career space moved into our career space, pushed everything else out. But as we were doing that time management, we realized after April 30th, it's done, and we have to start making time for other things. We have to start scheduling our lives around things that actually belong in the career space. I knocked down 2 weeks of comics this last week.
Let me tell you something. The emotional cost for me on this project was extremely high. Because, like Howard said, this thing came in and took over all the career space. And not only in my case, it stretched the career space far more than I've ever had career space before. I had never worked 90-hour weeks. I had never worked 60-hour weeks. And I did that for this project. And at the end of many of those nights, I would just crawl into bed, just quivering with stress and fear, because this was Tracy Hickman's project and I had to do it right. And I'm laying out a book, and hello, no professional layout training other than on the job.
And she's laid out a couple of my books.
I laid out a couple of his books. I laid out my book. Those were much less high-stress projects, and they were mostly pictures in both cases. All of a sudden, I had to figure out how to do words. You remember how I was talking about how I put family in my career space? All of a sudden, family was pushed way out on the edges. And when I talk about my son saying, you know, Mom likes to play with us when she's not busy, that comment came towards the end of these weeks. And I'm still working through some of the maternal emotional guilt for pushing all of this stuff out. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, where's my balance? on this because there are other projects that I want to take on, and part of my brain says, oh no, we can't do any more projects because my gosh, that one just took over everything. As a creative person, when you are looking at the big, shiny, pretty project, and because they are always big and shiny and pretty, and they look like they're just going to be gorgeous and wonderful, and this book is gorgeous and wonderful, you have to look at it and say, what's the cost? If I put this thing in the middle of my career space, what am I pushing out? Am I pushing out something I care about more? And you have to be able to take the emotional step backward from the pretty shiny project and be able to say no. If another big shiny project of this caliber comes to us in the next year, we will say no.
I'm going to argue that you don't have to make that emotional judgment up front, because we made that emotional decision up front. We wouldn't have taken on the project.
I did know what it was going to do.
I planned and
looked and saw what was going to happen, and knew I was going to have to bat emotional mother parenting cleanup afterwards, and decided to go ahead and do that. And I don't regret it. Let me say that. I don't regret it. I don't regret the project. I don't regret what we did. We did this amazing thing that should have been impossible. And forever, ever, ever, I'm going to be able to say, I did that. Okay? That shouldn't have been possible, and we did it. And that is just a major emotional boost. But you do need to make sure you're counting, and as you're structuring your life to make your spaces for your creativity, one of the big pitfalls of being a creative person is chasing this project for a while, and then this one for a while, and then this one for a while, and then this one for a while. And you have to be careful with that, because otherwise you end up nowhere. You have a question?
Well, kind of more of a comment, because I actually, because of your LJs, mm-hmm. it's gotten me thinking about how, because I went freelance this last year, yeah. So how do I manage my days? And a friend sent me a timer, because I was complaining that I found myself spending way too much time on projects that I only charged an hour's worth of time for, and I was spending 4, 5, 6, 7 hours on these projects, and people loved my feedback, but at the same time, I need to charge them more if I'm going to do this. So I actually, instead of looking at the clock like Howard does forward, I set myself an hour, and that is the amount of time that project gets, and then it's out the door. I might spend another half hour writing, you know, the feedback to the particular author, but they're getting an hour of my time, an hour and a half tops, as opposed to, because when you're a creative person, sometimes you get caught up in the project, and you're like, oh, this is so cool, I could really help out with this, especially as an editor. You think, oh, how can I fix it, you know? But you really have to be able to limit the time
so that you do have the space for those things that you do find most important.
That's excellent. Let's move kind of into tips and things that we do to structure our time. Timers. I time the kids' video game time. I time myself. As a matter of fact, while I was doing the XDM project, if I knew I had to pick up my son from kindergarten at 10:45, I would set a timer clock because I would be hyper-focused on that manuscript and doing layout. And if I didn't set the timer,
yeah, the little kitchen countdown timers where you say, ah, this is supposed to be in the oven for an hour. You know, I've got an hour to work on this, and when the alarm goes off, I have to get up and do something else.
Yeah, so that's a great idea. Thank you, Stacey. One of the things I do is I will set out and say certain spaces of time during the day belong to certain activities. I am not supposed to touch my computer before I get the kids out the door for school. Because if I get down there and start noodling around with my email and checking LJ and checking Facebook, then suddenly you realize that everybody has to scramble to get out of school, and I'm not nice mom.
How many of you have a trawl? A trawl, T-R-A-W-L. The things you do on the internet. You sit down in front of your computer and you hit websites.
Yeah. And you go here and here and here and here and here.
Okay,
and
does your trawl always happen at the same time every day? Okay, it doesn't. Then it probably should, because I have found that there is a fundamental human need that did not used to be a fundamental human need, to sit in front of your computer and click on crap. Right? And your trawl is just a way to kind of manage that. I have found that I will reach the end of my trawl, I'm like, I'm out of things to click on, but I want to click.
And so you go back to the beginning and do it again?
Yeah,
because somebody might have posted on Facebook. So doing that.
Set a timer, schedule it, and then stop doing it when the timer goes off and start another activity.
Schedule spaces in your day. The hours from getting up until the kids are out to go to school are supposed to belong to family. And for me, family and house. I can do conditions during that time, I can do laundry during that time, but I'm not supposed to touch my computer, because if I do, all of a sudden I've moved into the business space and my brain starts thinking business thoughts, and I'm not doing the mommy stuff very well anymore, because all of a sudden that's an interruption to business things, when actually it really should be business, which is waiting.
My friend Dave has ADD.
Is this smart?
Yeah. Smart Dave and Dumb Dave.
Yep.
They're both the same guy. He had this coding job. He'd write code, and he got in the habit of coming in the mornings, looking at the last night's compile, looking at the debugger, and saying, all right, following things need to be fixed, and would start writing post-it notes to himself and sticking them around his monitor. And he would spend all morning, from 8 to noon. He'd spend 4 hours writing sticky notes, and some of them had code snippets, and some of them had debug commands, but he would surround his monitor with post-it notes, and then, oh look, it's lunchtime. And then he'd go to lunch, and he'd come back, and he'd sit down in front of the desk and look at these post-it notes and say, all right, I don't know where all this stuff came from, but whoever sat here this morning was a lot smarter than I am. Let's start with this one. Oh, I can do that. I don't know why, but it's stuck to my monitor, so I'm going to do it. And he would start coding his way through the post-it notes until he got to the end of the day and ran the compile, and it spat out, the errors or whatever. But he finishes up his task, and it comes in the next morning, and Smart Dave comes in with a, oh good, the post-it notes are gone, and somebody's run the compile, and there were errors. That idiot. Okay. And the process starts again. And he said he was so incredibly productive. Before he arrived at that method, what he would do is he'd sit down and say, oh, this little snippet needs to be done, and then he would sit down and do it. And then he'd get there in the afternoon, he'd sit down and look at, and there's no tasks around his monitor, he can't make sense of the compile, he's just dumb all afternoon, and he's scheduled his time in such a way that Dumb Dave plays World of Warcraft at work. That didn't last long.
Yeah.
When he told me that story, I thought, wow. Okay, so there's four parts of my job. There's scripting, which should require Smart Howard and Funny Howard. There's penciling, which is kind of like scripting, because the illustration has to work along with the text and tell the story. So that's a Smart Howard job. And then there's inking, which if any of you watch Chasing Amy, that's just tracing. A monkey can do that. I'll trace an outline around your corpse. telling that Chasing Amy joke. Anyway, there's tracing, and then there's coloring, which for a long time was just flood filling, which is a lot like tracing. It's just in front of the computer. So I looked at this and thought, okay, when am I smartest? I'm smartest in the mornings. And so I would do all my scripting in the morning. If I got to the end of the morning and I'd done all my scripting and I didn't have any scripts that I could pencil, well, I'll try penciling this afternoon. But sometimes Smart Howard has left the building for the day, and I would get down to Dragon's Keep with a bunch of stuff and realize, if I pencil these, they're just going to suck. So I'm not going to pencil these. I'm going to go home and color and do something else. And I would schedule my day around, I'd schedule my creative spaces around when Smart Howard is actually in the building. And I found it really, really effective. Now, some days, Smart Howard would be in all day. This previous Monday, I scripted and penciled a whole week of comics in one day, and then inked them. And I got to the end of there, I was like, bam! I knocked down a whole week of comics in one day. That does not mean I'm capable of knocking down 7 weeks of comic in 1 week.
Smart Howard didn't show up the next day.
No, the next day, Howard didn't show up the next day.
No.
I don't know who showed up, but
creatively and biorhythmically, we all have these periods of high creativity and low creativity. We have high energy, low energy. Watch yourself. Observe yourself. Become a scientist observing yourself in the wild. Try and figure out when do you have... Serious. Figure it out. When are your good creative times? When are your bad creative times? And then you try and structure your life to put your career activities, your dream activities, in the spaces where the smart person is living, so that you can put less, you don't need to have high creativity to fold laundry.
One of the most valuable things, okay, so...
That goes back.
A little bit of backstory. Summer of 2005, I separated my shoulder playing volleyball because I'm an idiot. And I ended up mildly addicted to Martap because I'm an idiot. This has already been established. And replaced the Martap addiction with a food addiction because I'm an idiot. And gained about 10 pounds. Well, I was worried when I realized I seem to be taking two naps a day. I'm getting like 12 hours of sleep a day, and I'm a grown man. That's like baby sleep. That's why am I... This is weird. And so Sandra put together a sleep chart, which is something that we did for our kids. It's a tip from, you know, how to resolve your child's sleep problems or whatever the book was. So she made a sleep chart for me. If you're asleep, then you mark the blue box after you wake up. If you're awake, you mark the red box. And so I started keeping track of when I was asleep and when I was awake. And these patterns started to form, and I realized my behavior is just weird. Boy, when I do this in the evening, the next day is really expensive. Like, there was three naps that day and a bath. I had a color for bath, too. I started tracking these things, and what I arrived at, what we arrived at looking at this chart is, Howard, you're sick. You're physically sick. We got to fix something. And so we changed my diet and made me start going to the gym, and I got down to one nap a day, which, I'm a cartoonist, all right? I got to have one nap a day. I've had it today. It lasted for about 15 minutes. It's in my hotel room, and I took it between 12 and 12:15. But by charting that, by keeping track of what I was doing with my time, asleep and awake, I learned things about myself that were just freaking amazing. I am also
very
graphic
useful.
And extremely useful. Do I sound anal?
No.
Okay. I also graph my weight. Do I sound anal yet? Keeping track of these things allows me to control these things. And I found out that when I'm overweight, I oversleep and I don't get enough done.
It's the Heisenberg principle. Whatever you observe will change. You know, when you observe yourself, all of a sudden...
You don't want to watch my... You don't want to see my location. Watch my velocity.
Yeah. Okay, did I say the wrong principle?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Me trying to be scientific.
Let's ask a question.
Let's have questions, yes.
Oh, come on, ask a question.
I'm crying
out loud. Jeff.
My question is, how do you make those mental shifts from one space to the next? Because that's where I find myself struggling the most, because I have a set schedule. But, I mean, I happen to work about this kind of high drama in social work. So I get home, and I'm thinking about the person had their hands work off, or I'm thinking about, you know, the father who left for his children when she's 6-7 months
right.
pregnant, you know, and I'm just, like, traumatized.
Okay.
I'm trying to transfer.
Do you have any rituals?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Rituals are very, very helpful.
When you say rituals, you're talking about things that you use to help you make the transition?
Yes. So when I get home, because I really do like when I get home, I don't want to do my work at work.
Yeah.
You know, I go to my creative space.
Yeah.
Okay, so what it sounds like what you need to do is find whatever intense sort of, you know, 20-minute activity that takes all of your concentration but that isn't driven by you. You know, for instance, sitting down and playing against Jordan in a first-person shooter or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm making stuff up, okay? But something that's not driven by you but that requires your concentration so that you leave work at work, and as long as Jordan doesn't shoot off your hands and steal your children, you're fine. I had to go there. Come on. I had to go there. But you schedule it, and then what happens next is maybe easier. Is that no?
No, actually, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. I got a suggestion. When we first got married, my husband would come in from work and be real frustrated from work. And he would go in and lay down for 10 minutes. And in his mind, he would take all of the problems that he had at work, he would open a dresser drawer, he would put the problems in the dresser and close the drawer. And that 10 minutes brought out a completely different man in 10 minutes.
Howard works really well. The commute from the well home. That space, that was when you switched. Switch over during the commute.
Yeah, and the way I switched was not, I was not allowed to think about work things. What I did is I started running dialogue in my head with my characters. And I had my characters in my head arguing about stuff and talking and doing things. By the time I got home, I was like, oh man, I want a script. I want to write. I want to do what I want to do.
Run downstairs. Bye. Yeah.
Take all of your troubles, put them in a bottle, and then jam a cork on it, and then leave it out in the sun, and then shake it up when you're at the grocery store and make the news.
We are almost out of time. I wanted to run through a couple of really quick tips that we don't have time to get into. Charts. We've mentioned charts for charting.
We talked about charting.
Chart your activity, your goals, too. That can be very, very helpful. Enlist a cheering squad for whatever creative activity that you are endeavoring in. Early on, one of the only things that kept Howard doing the comic every day was the fact that people were reading it.
And I knew that they were reading it because they were writing about having read it on the forums and they were emailing me and stuff like that.
Who just says, yay, you did something creative. That feeds the creative demon a lot. And so
it sounds like ego in a weird way.
But find some people who will just say, yay, you did something, if you can. That really helps to fuel that. Keep the motor warm. That Howard talks about, you know, how he had the voices talking in his head on the way home. That's priming the pump or keeping the motor warm so that when you sit down to write or when you sit down to create, you're not starting from dead stop. You have to, you're already primed to go. Like the guy who did the NaNoWriMo in his lunchtime. He didn't just sit down and start thinking about it right then. He'd been thinking about it all day. So that when he sat down, off he went. Pushing through the dead zone or the hard bits. Trying to think, it's at least once a month that Howard comes to me, and he doesn't come to me at all. Well, and says, I don't feel like writing a comic, and I don't feel like I will ever feel like writing a comic again. It's, you know, the end of, you know, I'm just never gonna, we can't do it, it's dead, we're done.
It's not quite that bad.
No, because we recognize it now.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point now where I'm able to tell Sandra, I'm writing today off.
And I
feel like writing, and I don't feel like scripting, and I don't feel like inking, and I'm certainly not going to color because everybody hates it. And I'm going to go see a movie. And I'll go see a movie, or I just go do stuff.
There are going to be times where it all feels pointless and worthless and useless.
This is why I work a month ahead.
Yeah. And know that those things happen. Also know that you start, as you live a creative life over an extended period of time, you start going, oh yeah, this is the A type of depression, and this is the B type of depression, and this is the C type of despondent. And you start saying, oh yeah, here we are again. That's good. It sucks right now.
Oh yeah, I know this. I need to take a bath.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I know this. I need to go see Star Trek again.
Yeah. Seriously. But so you start recognizing those emotional peaks and lulls and things. And you start being able to say, I know how to deal with this.
Yeah. Damn well to the room. Dan related a story, and we've quoted it several times from Neil Gaiman and his editor, where Neil would get to the third act of his book and say, and it was a Nazi voice, he calls his editor and says, "This sucks. There is no way I can finish this book. This is just awful." And his editor laughed at him and said, "Neil, you do this every time at this point in the book. You call me and you say it's awful. And I tell you, just stick with it for a little while longer. And then you finish the book and we sell a million of them." And Neil laughed and said, "Oh, I do?"
Well, it was specific enough to the point that the editor knew at which point in the book he was when he made that call.
Yeah, you're about two-thirds of the way through.
I know where you are. You're at that part of the book.
Yeah, and knowing that about yourself is really helpful. Obviously, Neil had the luxury of having an editor tell it to him.
It doesn't make the emotion go away. You still have to deal with the... It would be really nice if you could make the emotion go away, not deal with it. But you still have to deal with the emotion, but at least you know intellectually that you'll get through it.
It's like knowing that this is PMS does not solve the problem of it being PMS.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly, because when I get on it, you know, not every time, but not every month, but when my husband would say, "Is this PMS?" I'd go,
Yes, dang it!
Okay, all right. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm not invalidating your emotion. I'm just suggesting that we should not try to solve this problem by buying a new car. Perhaps this will pass in 3 days and 15 hours.
One last thing that I wanted to mention is collaboration. This is something that Howard and I have done and continue to do. Having somebody else there to sanity check you, to read the comic and tell you if it's actually funny, to, you know, that back and forth can really help keep you going. It can help the creativity. As a neat collaborative time management story, during the final stages of XDM, when I was doing the final layout and Howard was doing the final pictures and we were both going, "This is never going to get done," I looked at the page count of the book. And when you are printing a book, you have to, the book has to have pages in multiples of 16 because of the way the books are constructed. And so we looked at the book count of the book and we realized that it was 148 pages.
It's like 146. And
yes.
You needed to shave two pages off.
I either needed to shave two pages off, or we needed to add 14. And I said, I shaved two pages off, and then we had a meeting with Tracy, and he put about 6 pages back in, which meant we had 10 pages.
Yeah, empty. Tracy laughed right in my face and said, "Just draw some more pretty pictures."
So we had to add 10 pages. And so Howard and I went downstairs and we're like, "Okay, let's look at this chapter." And we looked at this chapter because at this point I've already laid things out. I've already spent hours making the words wrap around the pictures and fiddling with the And now we need Howard to draw more pictures so that the chapters can take longer. So we find, okay, this chapter, we can add two pictures.
This chapter almost pushes onto another page. So if I do one picture in this chapter, and if I do it towards the end, so you don't have to do quite as much work, we'll wrap onto another page. Okay, good. We've added a page.
The other thing is, though, we can't add just one page because then it throws off some of the balancing later in the book. And so we had to find pairs of chapters. We can add a page to this one and to this one, and they're back to back, and that won't throw off the section heading page, which has to be on the right. And
one of the early ideas that got thrown out when we were looking at how many pages we needed to add was 4 blank pages of do-it-yourself index. which I thought was hilarious, you know, meta humor. And then I thought, you know what?
That looks like we didn't have time to index.
Which
is
exactly
true.
We didn't have time to
know what it looks
so
like that. Anyway, so Howard is, we identified, okay, these two chapters, you need to draw a picture here and a picture here. And then Howard would draw the picture. And then I would take, and then he would scan it and hand it to me, and I would throw it in, and I'd say, okay, that's working, now I need this picture, and he would go draw it, and then I would put it in and fiddle with it. And then we'd say, great, that's two pages. A4, okay! And we would do it again. And we did that for, I think, three pairs of chapters. We added funny pictures, and they're good funny pictures, and they add to the book, and we're glad that they're there now. But that was a very, very exhausting day.
That was a day.
Yeah, we spent a day doing that. And I think the kids ate
We added
chicken
10
nuggets.
Pages to the book
yeah.
in a day.
Yeah. And, you know, added
and
glossary.
The kids ate chicken nuggets and corn dogs.
Yeah, I think so.
Folks, we are out of time. Thank you so much for listening to us.